Hello, welcome, episode 22
Ooh.
Of the Ops Team, and again, I don't know why we're in a rave, disco,
raise the roof.
So we don't have an external security cam still, so we're stuck in kind of ghost mode, it's becoming quite useful actually.
Mm-hmm.
Last week we had a number of camera catastrophes, this week hopefully we won't, touch wood, we've recabled, retested, everything's working, so far, so good. Hopefully the cameras won't overheat. For those of you who are new, welcome. It's a sometimes weekly IT professionals focus show, bringing you sometimes the latest news.
No promises.
Occasionally with four people, but not usually at the moment, seeing as we're still hiring to fill roles in our team and the ops team. So yeah, check us out. Maybe you can come and join the team. We each have 5 minutes to cover our respective areas. So we've got DevOps and open source, DevOps stuff, and on-prem, and I'll do Azure stuff as well, kind of blended together. And for our spinner to kick us off, even though you can't see our spinner, we're going to use a nice bottle of orange juice. Do you want to spin it? You had such a powerful spin last week that... I think that was going around.
Yeah,
so,
me again.
Coming around that
I don't know. I don't plan these things. So.
Yeah, well...
There was quite a few spins there.
It was, and I'm gonna progressively drink more and more orange, so the spin dynamic may change.
All right.
So
give me the 5 minutes.
I'll give you your 5 minutes on DevOps. Are you ready?
Yep.
Here we go. I missed the button. I missed the button on my laptop. There we go.
All right. So first major announcement is around Dev Test Labs going general availability. So this, if you haven't heard about it, it is a service in Azure that allows you to have self-service provisioning capabilities. So, you know, and environment deprovisioning, providing all kinds of policies around your virtual machines that you have for dev test, right? So this could be a dev machine. It could be something that runs your actual applications on those. But the big differentiation from just running VMs in Azure is that having control, right? So having, you know, an unlimited budget and all those things is not the reality, right?
Especially in our team.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So if you want to, give, let's say, you know, shut down the VMs at a certain time, put kinds of governance and policies around the little sandbox, right, or dev test environment with those set of VMs that people have, the Dev Test Labs gives you that capability. The other thing that's really important to point out is that it enables you to plug into your existing deployment pipeline. So, for instance, you have a new build that comes up for your application, and you want to quickly just spin up a test environment for your developers to do tests or whatever, right, or automated tests against that environment, you can plug it in. Like, there's a Visual Studio Team Services extension. So it's just a task and saying, boom, spin up this, you know, dev test environment, and then you can, you know, push the build to it or whatever.
So you don't even have to leave your regular development environment.
Yeah, and it's not just VSTS, right? So we support other extensions as well. So, you know, if you're using Jenkins or whatever, like, you know, you just... you know, have it call to provision the dev test lab, put your new build in there, you know, do your thing. And then also you've got a cost control kind of mechanism, right? You can say, well, these VMs are going to be only during, you know, this hour range, right? We're going to automatically power them down.
Yeah.
And then we're going to automatically even delete this thing after X amount of time, right? Because if you start from nothing to spin up to whatever you want. And then, you know, it's also nice from the self-service provisioning side, because you can just set up like kind of an artifact repository of different things you want to install, you know, only allow certain images, don't allow people to install, let's say, the gigantic Jeeves series VMs, right?
Yeah, why is our bill $10,000 this month?
I just thought it'd be fun. I mean,
my app runs
so fast.
Wasn't called
cheap? I thought it was cheap.
Yeah. I thought it was a different currency.
Yeah. So it's kind of nice. So, you know, check that out. It's general availability. So give Dev Test Labs a run.
Nice.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's been mentioned a few times on the show, actually. So it is really useful, especially if you're a developer. But yeah, if you're testing apps as well.
Well, I wouldn't say just a developer, but if you're an ops guy trying to control costs.
Yeah, well, yeah, obviously, then, yeah, you set that
yeah,
up.
And
yeah,
the configuration
you set that up for your developers. Stuff, yeah.
Right, and you're, you know, as an ops person, you don't want to be the no guy or the like, hey, it's 3 weeks and we'll get you covered. Right, it's like, yeah, you know, just here's your sandbox. Here's your budget or whatever. Yeah, yeah. Just go to town, right?
At least until Azure Stack arrives, obviously.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Clock.
Okay.
Yeah. Mic drop.
So another thing we have is a new Cloud Foundry. So for those of you who are Cloud Foundry fans, there's actually an extension for Visual Studio Team Services. So just going and provisioning resources within your pipeline as well. So that's another announcement that we have. And then the last one that I have is an announcement that we have around continuous integration and deployment from Atlassian Bitbucket to Azure App.
Cool.
Azure App Services. So, you know, this is an interesting one because there's, you know, we've had quite a few services for some time now. So GitHub and, you know, a bunch of other integrations. But this is, Bitbucket is now on that list, and there's even a Visual Studio Code extension. So this makes it very easy to go from source code to just deploy to the web app, right? Or the app service. And some of the times the questions that we get in this space is when I introduce, you know, Visual Studio Team Services or TFS, and there's more steps, right? Now it's just a couple click, you know, in the existing app service world, it's like a couple clicks and now just source code just gets pushed to app, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you're using something like a Node.js app where there's no really compile, it's just like the files are there and you're done. Mm-hmm. That makes total sense. But for things where you need to actually do a build or you want to do tests, for instance, against that code, or you want to, you know, tie that to work items and do anything really more than just push the code from once you check in. Oh, boy.
Whoa.
Well, I had to reinstall the timer because okay. I got a nice shiny surface.
Oh, there you go. That's a good
so,
one.
So, yeah, I've not configured all the settings. So cow is not back yet.
Yeah,
but yeah, finish off.
So I'll finish my sentence and then we'll be done. Yeah, so really just if you want to do anything more advanced, you know, you probably are going to want to use Visual Studio Team Services to kind of do more advanced things. But otherwise, you know, hey, you know, that works too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Nice. Yeah, lovely. Excellent. And you more or less kept within your 5 minutes, which is good. You want to spin again?
Here we go. Oh, that's you.
Oh, well, that was a little ricocheted all over the place. Lucky. See, it's much lighter now when I've drunk all of the orange juice. Right, so I'll do my Azure section, then we'll spin again, and then we'll see what lands on again. Are you ready for my 5 minutes, or am I ready? Yes. There we go. I have toast notification and everything popping up here. Right, so in on-prem, I'll do on-prem news first. Seeing as I'm based on-prem. I recently got back from Germany, having participated and met a load of customers and partners at an MVP organized cloud and data center conference in Germany, which it was an incredible event, just one day.
MVP organized.
What, sorry? MVP, yeah. So Carsten Ratchfall, who works for Ratchfall IT Solutions, but is also one of our MVPs for Hyper-V, but obviously broader now, Cloud and Data Center. He organized the event, or his company, got a load of MVPs from across Europe and a couple of us from Microsoft Corp to go over and speak. So I did the keynote with Ben Armstrong, some guy who does virtualization, you may have heard of him. And there was a couple of other Corp people there, but mostly the sessions were delivered by MVPs. And the advantage of these kind of sessions is not only they're so in touch with the technology that they can give you a great experience about what it does, how it works, and so on, but they're also working with customers on a day-to-day basis and deploying some of this stuff. So they can give you a real world, this didn't work for me, or I did this way, and a lot of best practices. So it's very valuable to hear from them above and beyond just Microsoft people. But when you've got both there, you get the best of both worlds. Now, all of the sessions, and the reason I'm telling you this, if you didn't go to the conference, is all of the sessions were recorded and they're available on Channel 9. So I'll link to those. Some of them, bearing in mind, it was a conference in Germany, so some of them are in the local language, but many of them are from speakers across Europe, so they were delivered in English. So you'll be able to take a lot away from that. There's sessions on storage, on networking, on OMS, Azure Stack, Nano Server, containers, you name it. If you think about it in Windows Server 2016 and the current wave of technology, it's going to be there at that conference. So definitely worth checking out.
Sehr gut.
What?
Yes, German.
All right. Oh, you say good, yeah. Wunderbar. Right, another thing, sticking with on-prem stuff. There was a podcast done. I don't know if you've heard of a website called Runners Radio. I occasionally check it out and listen to some of the podcasts, but it's been going forever. Episode 475. What are we on? 2022 for Ops Teams? We've got a long time to catch up. So yeah, episode 475 was Hyperconverged Storage on Windows Server 2016 with Ned Pyle. So those of you who follow Ned on Twitter, those of you who know him, I can't believe I'm going to give him a compliment, but he's a great guy, incredibly knowledgeable, fun to listen to, definitely worth hearing. It's 40 minutes long, so no doubt there'll be a lot of deep discussion about how all of this stuff works across Spaces Direct, across, I'm sure, the other features will come up as well. Very, very useful to understand and get a perspective on from the podcast. Ned always typically gives me abuse on Twitter and personally, so it's I can't believe I'm promoting him. But yeah, definitely check it out. Definitely worth reading up and listening on the Runners Radio. So we'll give you the link to that as well. Now, the final area that I wanted to talk about on-prem, because I'll cover some more hybrid stuff in my Azure section, was around running Hyper-V containers with Docker on a Windows 10 desktop. So those of us in the room, you know, we've got two Surface Books and a Mac. We're all running Windows in some shape or form. I'm running Windows 10. Now, if you want to test containers and you perhaps don't want to use Azure for whatever reason, obviously you can't run Hyper-V containers in Azure yet because it requires nesting. So if you've no access to a server and you want to run Hyper-V containers and test them out and build applications, not that you have to build an app specific for a Hyper-V container. You can build one for a regular Windows Server container and it will just work. We've published a blog post that provides a lot of detail about what you need to enable on your Windows 10 machine. It is in the latest insider build, so it's not in just the regular, what's currently classed as, I suppose, the active RTM build with the latest cumulative update. You would need to be on the insider program and get the latest build.
It's really funny. You literally go to programs and features.
Yeah, in the blog post, it's Windows features on or off, tick containers, there's a restart required, and then there's a couple of little PowerShell commandlets that you run to pull down the image you need, which is a nano server image, and then you can start to use the regular Docker commands to start to build new containers, deploy, and the usual stuff you would use the containers for. And the nice thing about when you do use Hyper-V containers versus Windows Server is you get the extra level of isolation, which is obviously what Hyper-V containers are there for. But the flag you need to essentially run a Windows Server versus a Hyper-V container is just -isolation=Hyper-V. And that's it. No other change to your app, no other change to the overall system. It's just that runtime. I got the cow back. Yeah, I found it. It's just that runtime command. So really, really straightforward. There's a blog post that I'll link to by one of our technical evangelists, and I'll also link to a video on Channel 9 that the Hyper-V team put together that just walks you through it. It's really, really straightforward. It's like 3 minutes long. So yeah, cool stuff. And that's my on-prem news.
Nice.
Yeah. So do you want to spin again? And we'll see whether we just do those and then we'll come back to me. It's up to you. That was going round.
Yeah, I see what you did there.
Okay. Yeah, nice. So you're 5 minutes. Are you ready to go?
Yep. So Red Hat Enterprise Linux 6.8 is now available in Azure Marketplace, and it was announced by Red Hat on May 10th, the general availability of Red Hat 6.8. And in the marketplace, we had it available on the 23rd. So it's just in 2 weeks, the latest version of Linux, Red Hat Linux, is available on Azure Marketplace. So lots of customers are always asking, hey, we are using Red Hat. Now we announced a partnership with Red Hat. And we are really fast to, you know, make available all of these features in Azure Marketplace. So just go check it out. It's a pay-as-you-go version.
Nice. Yeah, just a comment on that too. I mean, we have a process for folks who want to submit images into the marketplace. Mm-hmm. So it's, I mean, yeah, there's some things on our side, but it's also a lot on the vendor side to submit things. So we do have times where vendors come in and the same day things are launched, it'll be up there right away. So
And we are testing extensively. So even if the image is ready, even there's a very minor problem, we don't accept it to be published. We work with the partner to make sure it's like really good.
But is 6.8 the latest Red Hat Enterprise Linux version anywhere, or is it up to 7, or is it beyond? 6.8 just the one that's the latest on Azure.
It's the latest one for Red Hat Enterprise 6 platform.
Right. Okay. Great. That makes sense. Nice.
And we have another guest or future guest in our Azure infrastructure, a company called Jenkins.
I've heard of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure you heard of them. So they had the same problems with like more or less every company. Like they have a very, you know, separate infrastructure in different locations. They have problems, you know, scaling up, down. And of course, the network, they have lots of these plugins and downloads. So in their last meeting, they had this project meetings. They realized that you need to use some kind of local common infrastructure. And then they chose to go with Azure.
Nice.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
So they will be moving their infrastructure to Azure, of course, not at once, you know, one by one. But they're really excited. And I was in the meetup with these Jenkins guys, Tyler, and we worked together on deploying these Jenkins instances on Azure Container Service. And they're going to use more or less the same environment, I guess. They're going to be use Azure CDN, data storage, compute, all of the, you know, cool features of Azure. So we're welcoming them to Azure, I guess.
Nice. Excellent. Cool stuff.
And continuing with Jenkins, and David mentioned that you can deploy from you can use Visual Studio Team services to integrate with different companies like Bitbucket, Atlassian. You can do the same with Jenkins as well. Most of the times, the customers are like, hey, we already have this CI pipeline ready in Jenkins or Product X. So, okay, the VSTS looks really good, but, you know, we have this investment. And people have to, I think, understand that it's not like you have to use X or VSTS. VSTS can pretty much integrate most of the offerings in the market, and Jenkins is one of them. So you can easily use your Jenkins CI pipeline to integrate it with Visual Studio Team Services to use the release management part of Visual Studio Team Services. So it's really nice.
Yeah. I've seen this too. A lot of customers, they've got Jenkins and they've got a test, you know, for using automated testing and builds. Mm-hmm. And then they don't really have like a real release pipeline, right? So it does the builds, and then it's kind of like Jenkins is this, like, there's all these build definitions, and then so there's no traceability between the different environments, right? They may have, you know, dev, QA, prod, or stage, or whatever, and it's like all these build definitions on Jenkins. Well, if you just have one build definition and then push that build definition into VSTS release management, now you've got traceability for one build across all the different environments, and you can answer the question, which a lot of developers can, is like, well, where is my code exactly?
Yeah.
In what environment? Yeah. Right.
And you can also use the other good parts of VSTS like Kanban, you know, collaboration, and you can keep your Jenkins CI. And
it's always risky mentioning Kanban with him. He just
Kanban
and bacon.
Yeah, that's right.
Kanban and bacon. Okay.
I did actually. If you see the post for the previous episode, I did actually link to Kanban on Wikipedia and bacon on Wikipedia.
I saw that. It was
just
good.
Just in case people
were curious. Because people didn't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. There's a relation between Kanban and bacon.
I know.
Yeah.
I've edited the Wikipedia page to say so.
Yeah?
Yep. No.
Don't trust Wikipedia posts. In general.
Wikipedia is truth. I don't know what you're talking
about. Yeah,
I find all my truth. Everything on the internet. It's all truth.
Internet.
Yep. Are you done? Is that your five?
Actually, I need 10 more seconds. There are some updates about Redis cache on Azure.
Right.
So the public preview of import and export. So if you have a Redis cache somewhere else or in Azure, if you want to export it, then import it. Now it's in public preview.
Right.
We have more features and improvements in Redis cache. So if you're using Redis, I'm going to provide you the link in the blog post. Just check it out.
Cool. And is that it?
Yep.
That is your news. Excellent. Right. So it's just me left to go. We don't need to spin. So I'll do my five on Azure stuff. I don't know if it'll take 5 minutes. It was famous last words. It probably will. Okay. Starting the clock. Now, there we go. So the first one, I said earlier that I was going to open on my Azure stuff with a hybrid type item. Over the last couple of days, in fact, over the last couple of months, but a day here and there, I've been in the studio recording a Microsoft Virtual Academy with the guys from Azure Automation, or OMS Automation, as we refer to it now. And one of the key things that I learned about OMS Automation is how you can get runbooks into the system. Now, you can build them through PowerShell textual authoring, through graphical authoring, and there's loads of great documentation on Azure to help you do that. But there is, if you've got an investment on-prem in System Center Orchestrator, you've obviously built graphical runbooks, and we work with some customers who've got thousands of these graphical runbooks to do various tasks against their on-premises resources, and that's powered by System Center Orchestrator. We want to help you transition to OMS automation if you want to go to that single location cloud-based automation engine. And to do that, we released a little while ago, but I was learning about it yesterday more and more, this System Center Orchestrator Migration Toolkit, which is currently in beta, so we're still soliciting feedback from you on its usage and so on. And that will essentially convert your integration packs that you have within Orchestrator that essentially allow Orchestrator to automate something, like there's an Exchange integration pack, a SharePoint integration pack. So by using those integration packs, you can automate that product. So it will convert your integration packs into modules that you can import into Azure Automation or OMS Automation. It will also convert standard activities, like if you've got activities that send an email or check a process or something. So they're not activities that exist within an integration pack, they're just standard within the product. We'll convert those for you, and they'll upload to the system, Azure Automation. And then finally, we'll convert your actual runbooks. And not only will it convert them, but it will also help you understand through rich logging and verbose feedback, if something couldn't be converted for whatever reason, it will tell you exactly where and what can't be converted, so you can then perhaps write that little bit in PowerShell to do that little bit of the runbook in a PowerShell way versus an actual module that represents that activity. So it was a really powerful tool. I actually find it pretty useful. So if you've got Orchestrator, you're thinking about OMS automation in Azure, definitely worth checking that out, and I'll provide the links. Now, a couple of weeks ago, on a couple of episodes ago, we talked about the Azure Hybrid Use Benefits, which is an acronym AHUB. You know, just so you know, AHUB. It's going to catch on.
Not IHUB.
No, AHUB. Azure Hybrid Use Benefits. And that Hybrid Use Benefit essentially allows you to take your on-prem Windows Server licenses with Software Assurance, take them to Azure, and what you run in Azure is just the base cost of running a virtual machine. So like as if you were buying one without Windows, for instance. Sorry, I just donked your laptop there. Damaged my watch. So you pay the base cost for running a compute virtual machine, and then on top you've got your Windows license that you've moved up. We're taking a similar approach now that we just announced a couple of days back to do the same for SQL Server. So you essentially can take your SQL Server licenses, so customers with an enterprise agreement who already have SQL Server licenses can use them on Azure VMs with the Microsoft certified bring your own license, BYOL, gallery images, and you don't get charged for the SQL Server licensing, just the compute cost. So again, it's pretty good if you've got the investment already in SQL. You can take that to Azure. Now, the final couple of bits that I wanted to talk about, something that's important to all of us, and or at least should be, that are using Azure, and something I use actually for my blog, Virtual Machine, which runs WordPress, is backup protection for IaaS virtual machines. Now, just because you're running a VM in Azure, in IaaS, doesn't mean it's magically protected against failure or corruption or whatever. It's just somewhere it's running. So you still need to think about traditional scenarios like backup and recovery. Unfortunately, the Azure backup service that exists within Azure as a separate service to compute actually protects the compute virtual machines really well. And there's a great deep dive blog post, although it's not hugely long, but it does go into quite a bit of depth, on backup protection for IaaS VMs. Now, the beauty of this solution is its simplicity. You create a recovery services vault where you're going to store your stuff that's going to be backed up. You specify your goal, so what do you want to protect? Is it on-prem VMs or is it Azure VMs? In this case, we'll focus on Azure virtual machines. You define a policy, so schedule, retention, and your retention could be 99 years. So you've got that long-term retention if you need it for compliance. And then you say, what do you want to protect? Windows or Linux VMs. Now, my blog is running WordPress on Ubuntu, and it's protected fine by Azure Backup. For Windows VMs, it uses VSS, so it's app consistent. For Linux VMs, it's file system consistent protection. But even so, it's very important that you are protecting those key workloads. And they've shown how to do it with PowerShell, both for backup and for restoration. Obviously, backup is only half of the story. The final thing, I just need a few more seconds. For those of you who are interested in Azure Site Recovery and you're using VMware in your environment or physical servers that you want to protect from on-prem into Azure using Azure Site Recovery, if those workloads on-prem are quite high-performance workloads and they need higher performance storage to operate efficiently, we've just announced some specific enhancements for Azure Site Recovery that use premium storage for VMware virtual machines and physical servers that you're replicating into Azure. So the scenario is you've got on-prem stuff, high performance, you're replicating it into Azure. Instead of having to sit on standard storage, it can sit on premium storage. And then when you do fail over into Azure, it runs with the highest levels of performance there. So yeah, just something to note if you are using that particular scenario, and there's a blog post that the team have done that illustrates and explains all of that. So that was my few bits. It did take the 5 minutes. I'm surprised. To wrap up the show, anything else from you guys? Should we check the Twitters and see what's going on? No, nothing. Should we go our blended view? There we go. Ghost mode. We're up to 353 followers. It is like a hockey stick.
Wow. Yeah. We could only get our Technet Edge. Oh yeah. Man, dates me too much there.
Let's just have a quick look and see. How many people still follow TechNet Edge? The Edge Show. Followers, 2,699. I think. I thought it was higher than that, but, you know, yeah. So if you are a TechNet Edge follower and you know other TechNet Edge followers, tell them. Come to the ops team. It's new and fresh and relevant and occasionally regular. So anything else? Anything else from you guys? Should we wrap it up?
I think so.
That was episode 22. We're keen to hear from you. You know, email the show at theopsteam@microsoft.com. Get in touch with me at Matt McSpirit. I'm pointing at you.
Oh, yeah.
You're just fiddling with
the... I'm playing with the video. I'm August Fastenwaji at August Fastenwaji.
Yep.
Yeah, and then at DTZAR.
Nice. So you can get on the Twitters, get in touch with us. Obviously, at theopsteam is our team Twitter as well. And yeah, we'll look forward to seeing you again in episode 23 next time. See you later.